You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name's Clint Clifton, and we have another episode of the podcast today. And today we're going to talk about something that is every church planter is going to deal with at one time or another. We're going to talk about how to help when disaster strikes your community. Now, we've just been through 2 years of disaster striking the world, and but we have very special and specific opportunities given to us by God. For us to use to help get the gospel into the lives of others. And so today, as our guests, we have Taylor Field and Kay Bennett. Now, Taylor is a Send Relief missionary, and he's the pastor of Graffiti Church in New York City. He planted that church, and he's been there over three decades. Graffiti Community Ministries serves and empowers children and youth and adults on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Taylor's written several urban ministry books, and he and his wife, Susan, have two married children. And Kay's here, too. She also is with Send Relief, and she's the director of the Baptist Friendship House, and she has been since 1997. She's, like I said, she serves with the North American Mission Board, and she speaks on issues regarding poverty and homelessness and domestic violence and even substance abuse and human trafficking. So, Kay and Taylor, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Likewise.
So let's start off by talking about what are some of the things that a church, a local church, can do to position themselves to be ready to respond in the event that there's a disaster in their community.
First thing I would say is not wait until the crisis or disaster happens. Be prepared ahead of time. The unique thing about our churches is you have people with different gifts and abilities and interests, and I'd go ahead in advance and find out what people's interests are in addressing crisis or disasters, and things as simple as having a clothing closet set up or a crisis closet with needed items at the church. Encourage members to always have a survival bag ready to go. I know I'm here in Louisiana, and we have hurricanes a lot. So it's so important to have a survival kit and know what goes in those. And you can go to redcross.org and they will give you a list of needed items that goes into a survival kit. Having people designated in your church too, to always check on folks that may be vulnerable or in need, senior adults, folks that may have some disabilities or things like that, but always be ready to contact folks when a disaster happens to make sure they're okay and what their needs are. And then just basically having a list of local resources that are available. Taylor, what would you say?
And I would just add to that, Kay, Clint, I'm a church planter too, started in a storefront in New York City. So I just transitioned after 35 years from pastoring that church. But so I'm going to go back 21 years when 9/11 happened. But I used the principles there that all through all the other crises. And when 9/11 happened, we were in Lower Manhattan. An FBI chaplain from the Oklahoma City bombing flew in and talked to us. And here's the thing I didn't think about. In addition to what Kay's saying, being prepared, he said, in a crisis, most people don't make an appointment with a counselor to process. They don't go to a therapist. They don't even go to the pastor or chaplain. They talk to people that they know and see every day. And so that was a huge thing for me, because that means as a pastor who's starting something, their core team or whoever, it's as before a crisis comes to work on what they're going to do in terms of helping people process. And the thing that blew my mind was, you know, it's kind of intimidating. Like, you don't have to have a 7-year training to be a counselor. You know, you don't have to have that. We boiled it down to one word. It's right from the Bible. But the one word is listen. Wow. listen. I mean, there's tons of scriptures we go into, and it's guard the door of your mouth. You know, I work a lot with people in recovery. You know, what they say is, they say, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. So anyone can learn that. And so we learn some things about doing that. And that's what you could work with. For us, we are tutoring kids. So it's the tutors who talk to the mothers every day. They're the ones that need to be, they're the most powerful ones in terms of listening. You don't have to fix it. Just listen. And I got a takeaway I can give you if you want.
Yeah.
As a pastor. Should I go ahead?
You should.
It took me a while. I mean, I've been a pastor for a while, but in a crisis, no one needs to hear a better story. Mm-hmm. Oh, you had this problem with the tower and the smoke and it triggered things in you. Well, my son was in high school right next to it, and he saw three people jump out of the window. They don't need to hear that now.
Yeah.
All you need to do is just tell me what happened. That must have felt overwhelming.
Right.
What were you thinking? And in almost any crisis, whether it's a hurricane or a shooting or a collapsed building or whatever, that simple principle for a church planter, train your people that you work with now, because they're the ones you're going to see.
Wow, that's powerful. Now, I'm just thinking about the two of you. Kay, you've been in New Orleans since 1997. You went through Katrina, I take away, yeah. And Taylor, you were in New York City through 9/11. You guys have been through, you know, in our lifetime, what would be some of the biggest disasters in your local community that we can even imagine? What are some gospel opportunities that are embedded in disasters that church planters should be aware of and thinking about that would cause them to be proactive about setting up the things you were just mentioning?
I'm going to echo what Taylor said, because you just need to be ready to walk alongside of people through hard times, and they want to tell their story. I mean, we have supplies and all kind of items here, but I learned a long time ago, and Katrina taught me this, that when somebody comes for those items, it's not the items they want the most. They want to tell their story, just like Taylor said. And so the listening is always the best thing to do. Hear their story. Listen to them, debrief them, help them to kind of deal with what's going on, but also be willing to pray for them. And I'll tell you what, during disasters, people lose their Bibles. They get blown away, flooded, have Bibles around, because I will tell you, that's the number one thing I get asked for when somebody comes to get supplies is, do you have a Bible? And it just, I mean, the disaster itself has a person where they're ready to hear about Jesus, because Jesus is truly the only person that can give us the comfort and peace that we need during a hard time.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, and I would just add to that, I think, I was a pastor of a church in the East Village, and we even share a church member that was there with both of our places, but a lot of people go there to get away from Christianity. And so one of the things I've realized is, with all the different cultures and the challenges right now, kindness crosses every culture. And I'm thinking about a guy named, I'm going to call him Hammer. He was super mad at Christians. He lived on the street. He had a dog. He hated us, but we had a veterinarian that helped out his dog, so he at least talked to us. But when Hurricane Sandy came and our neighborhood got flooded, we weren't expecting it. The power's out. Someone had brought in a generator. It was like a gold. And so everybody's crowded around trying to recharge their phones. And they got food happening. And we started, helping clean out buildings. And the guy's got a guitar playing. And this guy named Hammer was so angry. And this is what he said. He said, "How come atheists aren't doing cool things like this?" That's not against atheists. I was an agnostic atheist myself once. But it does show those things can build a bridge when other things can't. And that's, kindness is a biblical word. It's the kindness of God that leads us to repentance. It's just, to me right now in our situation, it's pretty important.
We're tempted to think, like everybody else, when disaster strikes, we were about our own well-being and the well-being of our families. There's nothing wrong with that, of being focused on our well-being and the well-being of our families. However, throughout history, it seems like God has used his people, particularly in times of disaster and distress, to advance the gospel, How can a pastor prepare his mind to receive disaster with gospel hope? Everybody else is feeling the shock waves of what's happened. How can the pastor prepare himself to see a disaster as a gospel opportunity?
You know, it can be overwhelming when a disaster happens. And Katrina taught me a very, very valuable lesson in regards to the question you ask. When I got back to New Orleans, you know, 80% of the city flooded. We had evacuated, came back. It was like a ghost town here. And one of my missionary friends asked me, because she was evacuated somewhere else, would I meet an insurance adjuster at her house? And so I told her, sure. Well, I drive to her house. I didn't pass anybody going. There was nobody anywhere. I got to her house. I sat for a long period of time before the insurance adjuster came. Nobody came up and down the streets. And I started having a pity party. I was like, God, there's nobody here. What am I going to do? Right. You know, and the thing is, when you have a pity party, nobody shows up but you. So I turned, though, and I looked at her house. And it was this overwhelming feeling. This is where you start. One at a time, and you help people rebuild their lives one at a time, and it matters to every person you help. So you can look at the big picture, 80% of the city flooded and houses destroyed, and think, I can't do this, but you can if you take it one at a time. So my encouragement would be is to focus on God and focus on the one and reach people one at a time and help them rebuild their lives.
Yeah, I suppose based on that, you know, as a Christian who's trying to offer gospel hope when we're doing this type of work, there's, you know, a different sense of accomplishment if we're imagining what we're doing as worship, as opposed to if we're imagining what we're doing as, you know, really moving the needle in terms of correcting the disaster or the problem that's happened. How much a difference do you feel like that makes, the missionary or the servant's outlook on motivation, the motivation for why they're doing what they're doing?
I love that phrase, what you're saying, Clint, because I think, you know, as you read the Bible, I mean, worship without this component is kind of revolting to God.
Yeah.
I hate your worship unless it's doing these things. So it is a part of worship. And I think what Kay said, we'll sometimes say this about, you know, the bigger the crisis, the more personal we need to become. And we say we don't want to know people by their need. We want to know them by their name. Like Kay said, it's that one person at a time. But I just want to say, you know, for me as a church planter, you know, I don't know if we probably won't have time to talk about, there's crises and then there's chronic crises, you know, but I think for church planters, for me, when I started out, Clint, it was fear. I was afraid for my family. I was afraid things were going to happen to me. And it was just, you know, I had a little 2-year-old. I remember the first, you know, first month we were there, I brought him out to the park. I was so excited. It was a new environment. I said, hey, look at this big squirrel over here. Isn't this cute? And it turned out to be a rat. And, you know, now that's no big deal. But at the time, it was a culture shift. And I said, what am I doing to my family? Or a little bit later, this was during the AIDS fears and stuff. I looked down and my little toddler was holding a hypodermic needle that he picked up, you know, and I go, what am I doing to my family? And the scripture, and I think this helps us as we prepare for crises. For me, it was 1 John chapter 4, verse 18. Perfect love casts out fear. I want to be, no matter what, in God's will. If it's a crisis, whatever it is, I want to know I'm in God's will, like a fish is in the water.
Yeah.
And then it's okay no matter what happens. What I don't want to be is a fish outside of water.
Yeah.
That's where the trouble is. So I needed some self-talk to just take those steps. And I'll say a word about Kay. You know, and I know all the things are important. Worship, the microphone, the stage, podcasts, all those things are important, but sacrifice is what's going to touch people. And Kay, you know, Kay is a great communicator, but what touches me is her life, where she's poured her life out for other people. That's what interests, that's what compels people. So I think it's part of, a church planter has to talk to himself about the fact that there really may be sacrifice.
Yeah, that's powerful. There are, in every community, there are nonprofits, NGOs that are, you know, organized specifically to help meet these these kinds of needs. And I don't know about your experience, but there are generally, some of those are founded, faith motivated organizations are founded by people of faith. And the faith community is really active. You referenced this just a few minutes ago, Taylor, in this space. But sometimes the church itself isn't so active in that space. It's like it's left to this nonprofit thing. And sometimes the churches aren't engaging with those nonprofits. There's a bit of a disconnect there. It seems like to me, I don't know about to you. It feels like to me that the church should be really front and center, not just the church conceptually, universally, but individual churches should be known for their partnerships with organizations that spearhead these types of efforts. Both seem to be really important, but the church's organized engagement in that is, it feels like it has potential for incredible power. I mean, our church is pretty small. The church I lead here in the Washington, D.C. area is pretty small. We're about 300 folks. And we engage with the foster care system in our community in such a way that, you know, feels meaningful to them and us. And it just took a little bit of concerted effort to do that. And I just think, man, if churches embraced real partnerships with nonprofits and even, you know, government organizations in their community that are trying to meet some of these needs, we might see the church's reputation really take a positive turn in our community. How do you guys think churches should be engaging with nonprofits?
I think when you engage with nonprofits, you help to make what they do bigger and better, but they also, it opens a door for you to minister and be a part of what they do that you normally wouldn't be able to reach people. We partner with Feed the Children. We partner with Southern Baptist Disaster Relief Teams. And I think a cool thing is most all denominations have disaster relief teams.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important that our local churches connect with their state and the DR team. And you can get training through them. You can get training through redcross.org. Contact them. Send Relief has resources for trainings, too. But I think it's important when you partner with different nonprofits that are local, you get to see what the greatest needs are in your area. And you're able to come alongside of them to meet those needs. Yeah. And it'll be amazing what it does to your church, because it will give your church an identity. It will give them an opportunity to often volunteer or collect needed items. And you'll see your church grow from that. You'll see yourself grow from it.
That's good. One of the things I see churches doing sometime in regard to that is like trying to reinvent the wheel themselves so they own it 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, this kind of thing, like this was my impulse when I was a church planter. Like I wanted to engage the community, but I wanted to do it on my terms. So I wanted to own the whole process. And I mean, it took me a few years to realize I'm not good at most of that stuff. I don't know how to do it. And if I do it well, it'll gobble up all of my time and I won't have bandwidth to do the things that God specifically called me here to do. And so I have to, in a sense, I'm interdependent on some of these nonprofits and organizations. Taylor, how do you feel like a church should be engaging with nonprofits?
Well, and I just say before we came on, I was talking behind where Kay is. She's got some certificates, and one's an award from the FBI for what she's done in terms of addressing human trafficking with them. And she's really modeled some of that to me. And as you mentioned, Send Relief is the national organization that works both nationally and internationally. The website has tons of resources. But for me, honestly, Clint, again, I was a church planter. There was a point, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it was kind of probably a midlife crisis. I just thought, you know, there's so many needs. It's so overwhelming. My resources are so small. And, you know, a woman tried to hit me with a board with a nail in it, and one guy tried to choke me, and I just was having a tough time.
Yeah.
And I'll just speaking devotionally, you know, I just sensed that it was an inner spirit. It wasn't an audible voice, but I just was a quiet moment where the Lord promises the voice behind you will let you know whether to go right or to the left. Just the simple words, make allies. Right. You don't have to agree with people on everything to be an ally in this challenge. There are challenges, and that was a turning point for me. And I think that's good for church planters and just to say, hey, I can make allies with a lot of different people.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So the two of you have the ear of pastors who are listening right now, and many of them are really not meaningfully engaged in partnerships in their community, in helping to meet needs. Most of them are not prepared for a disaster that's coming. So what sort of appeal might you make to them as ministry leaders who have spent your careers really focused on serving people as a means of bringing the gospel to them? What would you have to say sort of as a final word to those church leaders?
Our mission statement, what Send Relief says, meet a need, build a relationship, change a life. And that's kind of our motto here at Friendship House. And I think it should be everybody's motto, because we have a world full of needs right now, needs yeah. everywhere. And I think if we open our eyes and we're the hands of Jesus and the feet of Jesus, and we reach out to help others, you're naturally going to grow your church that way. You're naturally going to change lives. And I just firmly believe it takes all of us working together to change our world. So
that's great.
Taylor.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of controversial issues right now, and some of them, there's important verses about them, but sometimes there's only 6 or 7 verses about that issue, to be honest. But there are over 2,000 verses about helping the poor, helping those that are having difficulty. That's got to be part of the heart of the church's endeavor. And I would just say this. We didn't have a chance. There's chronic crises all the time that we deal with. But I would say this. I'm glad someone told me this. When a crisis comes, make a 3 to 5 year plan, not a 1 month plan.
Yeah.
Because that is going to, it's think about this, your whole community, being embedded in your community is going to make a difference in a lot of different ways. And think about it in that way, not just as a crisis for a few weeks.
Wow. That's so helpful. So before we sign off today, let me just mention a shameless plug for Send Relief. You can find out more about this. If you want to get started, you're a ministry leader, a pastor, a church planner, you want to get started, sendrelief.org. There are 5 particular focus areas for Send Relief. They are strengthening communities, they're caring for refugees, they're protecting children and families, they're fighting human trafficking, and they're responding to crisis and disaster. And so any of those that seem interesting to you, something you want to be particularly prepared for, sendrelief.org can help you do that. And so go on over to their website, sendrelief.org, and find out all that you need to know there. Taylor and Kay, I can't thank you enough for not just having this conversation with me, but for the incredible amount of time and energy you put into serving the world for the sake of Christ. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Taylor, for all of the kind words. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.